Welcome to the Real Estate Marketing Podcast. My name is Jerome Lewis. I'm your host for today. The Real Estate Marketing Podcast is a podcast where we talk marketing, tech, business, and leadership. We talk these things for real estate agents, real estate investors, and real estate entrepreneurs. The Real Estate Marketing Podcast is a podcast that has two purposes. Purpose number one, to educate and inform our audience and listeners. Purpose number two, Scott, to spotlight you, your business, your service, or your product in a way that provides value to you, including market exposure and content creation. With that, we have a very special guest. I'm actually very excited, y'all. I think I know Scott for 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
We have Scott. Scott, say your last name for me, please.
So Poirier. It's a good French name.
All right. Scott Poirier. Scott has developed exceptional skills in working with people and a strong foundation in building meaningful relationships. His expertise lies in negotiation, creative financing, rehabbing, wholesaling, buy and hold, multi-units, and on, where he has honed his skills and developed a keen eye for identifying lucrative opportunities. His ability to connect with people and understand their needs sets him apart in the industry. Scott's platform is designed to help both aspiring investors and seasoned investors with not only the technical know-how, but also the interpersonal skills necessary to thrive in the real estate world. He has a natural talent for breaking down complex concepts into easily understandable lessons, empowering his students to take confident steps towards their financial goals. Scott has been married 43 years. So Scott knows something about relationships, y'all. 43 years, and has a great love for his family. He is an avid racquetball player, crazy about organic gardening, and deeply amused by his chickens. Scott, I'm excited that you're here. Welcome to the show.
Man, Jerome, it is good to be here. Our paths just keep crossing. And I got to tell you, it's an honor to connect with you again. And you're a serious dude, man. I know you're in this. You're in real estate. I know you want to be helpful to people. I'm just excited, man. You're Scott, a good guy.
Thank you. Thank you for making the time today, Scott. I'm excited. I've been looking forward to this. I was reading your bio, and I'm going to pick some things out. But before I do that, Scott, tell us your story and how you got to where you got to. Tell us how you got in real estate.
First of all, what you really should have said when you read the part about me being married for 43 years, you should have stopped and said, wait a minute, are you saying you're 43 years old? But you didn't really say that. So it's shocking to me that I would say, wow, 43 years. My wife and I, we were like 7 years old when we got married. So that's why I look so young. But anyway.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. I wonder why Scott. So that makes a lot of sense.
43 years. But anyway, so so what was your question about how I got into real estate?
Yeah, tell us how you got into real estate, because I know a little bit about you, but I want our audience to know. Like, you used to be like involved in the church space, and somehow you got into real estate. So we would love to hear that journey, that path.
So So you already mentioned I've been involved in ministry pretty much my entire adult life, and I guess I could say I sort of had that early calling that, you know, I've always been about people. I've always had just a natural desire to connect with people. I think I'm an educator at heart. I like to be helpful, especially if there are people that are in crisis or whatever it is. It's just something in me that just comes out of me. And so I had this early calling and got into ministry, pursued a bunch of education stuff. I don't regret any of it. It taught me a lot of stuff, but I can tell you what taught me the most in life. Other than the education, you think the education is what teaches it all to you, but it's just dealing with people. And so in those early years and being in ministry, man, I sat in people's kitchens and living rooms and heard things and processed through things and thought, wow, the stuff that people, you know, kind of go through. And it really forced me to try to really figure out how can I really be helpful to these people. And so really, I devoted about 30 years of my life in at least what I would say paid ministry. So I've been a pastor. I started in youth and family ministry. I just have that kind of energy. I still have that kind of energy in working with young people. But I sort of moved up the ranks, I guess, and then got into just regular, you know, pastoring a church. And I just have done that for decades. This was never a profession. And I don't even know if I want to call it a profession, maybe a vocation. This was never a vocation about money. I wasn't doing TV evangelism stuff, okay? In no way were we making a lot of money in doing this. And so I retired back in 2016, primarily first because I was done from the paid ministry perspective, really put a lot into that ministry. And just felt like, you know what, I got to that age where I thought I need to maybe start working on some other things just to take care of my family, take care of any kind of wealth that we could create just to take care of ourselves, especially as we get older. And I want to leave something behind, you know, for my family, but not just for my family, Jerome. I want to leave something behind that still does something in culture, does something in society. And I think I would go to my grave feeling very peaceful that something else can continue going on that's good and positive and really helps people. And so I thought, you know what, maybe I'll get into some real estate. I got to figure out some way to bring in some additional, you know, money. And so I got into real estate, and I did it with a business partnership with a really good friend of mine. And we didn't really know what we were doing at the very beginning of it all. I've been doing this for over 10 years, but we got into real estate, and just like, I guess I should have known that I was going to do this. Once I got into it and I realized, wow. You know, we ended up picking up these 2 5-unit apartment buildings, which we still own to this day. And it's insane what's happened with just values and all this stuff with those properties. And I just go, I had no idea the potential of what real estate could really do for you. And so once we got into it, I got really curious and thought, well, I wonder what else we can learn in real estate, because there's a lot of stuff to learn in real estate. And that's what projected me, kind of threw me out there to go, wow, there's a lot of things that I can learn. And I got drawn to creative financing. And that sort of has been my niche really since like 2015. So I'm about 9 years in on that, or coming up on 9 years with that. So that's the 10,000 foot view. So I didn't come into it to do all this other stuff that I'm doing. I just came into it to try to at least do something to get some income in where I could save some money and prepare ourselves for retirement.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that, Scott. So I'm going to pull from your bio and I'm going to test you a little bit, right? So inside of your bio, it says he helps break complex topics down into like easy to understand stuff. So one of the things that I find, especially for newer people, like that can be complicated is creative financing. And you just mentioned that. You talked about getting into creative financing. So can you help us understand what creative financing is, and then help us understand some of the benefits of creative financing?
Yeah. So maybe I'll come a little closer than the 10,000 foot view. As far as the creative financing way of doing things, anyone can find that out. You can go on YouTube. You can find anybody that can say, this is how you do owner financing. Here's how you do a lease option. That kind of stuff is pretty easy to break down. The harder stuff, and this is the stuff that I really try to work with the students that I've been working with for over 5 years now, hundreds of students around the country, is to really break down the complexities of stuff that's going on in their own head about the stories that they tell themselves, right? And so I really work really hard with my students to try to slow them down and make sure that they can have confidence in themselves. Because once we can cross that barrier, and they've got the right confidence, the posture and how they handle themselves completely changes. Okay, so that's the big thing that for me that I find that I work on with my students. It's really doing that. Now, as far as creative financing, what drew me to it is, and maybe that's a loose term, creative financing, terms, right. Some people call it terms. It's basically working with sellers and buyers without having to work directly with banks. I don't like guaranteed debt, personal debt in that way. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't feel morally responsible. If I go into a contract, I have a very, you know, solid moral compass that says if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do this. So I really want to make sure I take care of the seller. I want to make sure if I bring in my buyer, I'm going to take care of them as well. I just don't want the weight and the heaviness of debt and a bank telling me what I can and cannot do. And so creative financing allows me to work around that, number one. Number two, the other thing with creative financing, with the people that tend to work with me, a lot of times they don't have another option. They don't have enough money in the deal. Maybe their credit's really beat up. These are sellers. Maybe their credit's beat up and they got $80,000 of equity in their house. And if they could get to that equity, they could probably fix some of their financial problems. But guess who won't let them refinance? The banks won't, because their credit stinks, right? And so these people get trapped in their houses and they don't know how to get out. And so creative financing means that, and I'm very broad on this, there's a lot of ways you can work with a seller if you make it a win for them. And I always tell them up front, listen, I want to help you as much as I can help you. It's got to make sense for you, but it's also got to make sense for me too. Both of us have to feel like we're walking away from this and that it can work together. So if you can get a seller to agree to that, you can get real creative about how you can do this.
Okay. All right. Thank you for sharing that, Scott. Can you tell us a little more or share like maybe one of your favorite stories about win-win? Because people use that term, but like, what does it truly mean? And yeah, I'm talking about like, I have like a role-playing call going on right now, and we kind of do some of this creative role-playing. And sometimes we talk to sellers and it's like, they're asking for too much and it's not really a win-win. If I take that deal, Mr. Seller, I'm going to lose. So can you talk a little bit about win-win and so we can understand how it makes sense for both parties?
So understanding who it is that you're talking to is going to really help you to see if you can actually go down that road. So I can tell you that one of the guiding principles for me is it's just about being transparent with the seller in this case. And if their number's off, I'm going to just tell them the way it is. I'm not talking about being fresh or arrogant or anything like that. But let's just say, and I'm assuming most of you people probably know what the term, the letters ARV mean. But in case you don't, it just means after repaired value, which is another way of saying, here's what the top of the market looks like for a house like the one that you're looking at. So I'll just give you an example. You're looking at a house. If it were completely repaired, completely fixed up, it'd be worth $300,000. Let's just say that that's what the market would say for that particular house. So now you're talking to a seller. You're hoping to get a deal on owner financing or creative financing. And you ask the seller and say, hey, you know, one of the first questions I'm going to ask is, hey, let me just tell you typically how I buy. I normally buy owner financing. And all that means is that I make a payment to you monthly for a period of time that we can agree on. And then within that time frame, we'll pay you off whatever it is that we owe you. And so, Joe, I wanted to ask you, would you consider taking a monthly payment if we can work these details out? That's my question. If they say, yeah, I might be open to that. I'm not really sure how all that works, but I might be open to that. I say, great. Well, Joe, let me ask you this. If we can agree on those terms, what would be the lease that you would sell the house for? So I'm asking that question very early in the conversation. And if Joe says, well, yeah, I want $310,000, but I know ARV, which means it's in perfect condition. ARV means perfect condition. I know the ARV is 300. He wants 310. We're going to have what I used to call back in my ministry. We're going to have a come to Jesus moment. Okay. So I'm going to say, yeah, Joe, I'm going to just be honest with Joe. I'm not pulling his leg. I go, yeah, Joe, that actually puts you above the top of the market. If my ARV is 300 and he wants 310, he's above the top of the market. So I tell him that, Joe, yeah, man, that price puts you above the top of the market. I can't buy a house above the top of the market. In fact, I got to get it just a little bit below the top of the market. Do you have any flexibility with your price? If Joe says, no, man, my neighbor next door, he sold his house for 320 and my house is better than his. See, every seller's like, yeah, my house is better than everyone else's. I get it. So at this point, everything in me, I'm holding up my phone here going, yeah, Joe, that's not going to work for me. Are you sure you don't have any flexibility? Because I really would like to buy your house. Nope, I'm going to get 310 all day long. I'm going to make a decision. If he's kind of pushy or arrogant on the phone, I'm probably never going to call him back. But if he's like, no, I really think I can get this 310, I may say something like, yeah, Joe, that's just not going to work for me. Tell you what, how about if I give you a call back here, you know, next month sometime, just to touch base and see how things are going. Would that be okay with you? Now, most people will say yes. They don't mean it, but most people will say yes. When I hang up the phone, I'll decide, should I call this guy back? Now, if I tell him a month, I'm going to call back in about 2.5 weeks is what I'm going to do. Okay. And I won't remind him of that. I'm just going to call him back. Hey, Joe, just giving you a call. I don't know if you remember me, but I talked to you, you know, last month and definitely interested in your house. Just wanted to see how things were going with you. And then my job is to listen at that point. And if he's telling me, oh man, no one's coming out to see my house and trying to sell it, but I can't get anybody out here. I say, well, Joe, I mean, I'm definitely interested. That's why I'm calling you, man. So I'm going to engage that conversation that way. So that's the value of follow-up. Okay. My point is this, Jerome, that I just tell the seller the way it is. If their price is too high, I just tell them, yeah, I can't buy a house above the top of the market. So I don't know if there was another part of your question there that I...
You did fine. You touched on it a little bit, but I was going to talk about the importance of follow-up. That's actually the reason why I started this podcast. I wrote my book because I realized that's where people lack. Like the lead generation, I'm not going to say it's easy, but most people got that down. They go out, they generate the leads, they do the stuff, they post the signs, the bandit signs, but they don't follow up. You touched on it. I would like to hear your perspective on the importance of following up. Could you talk about that, please?
Yeah. So I want to show you. I got a folder here on some leads that I've been working on. Okay. And these are, a lot of these are follow-up, and these are quality leads. These are people who raise their hand, meaning it's, when I say someone raises their hand, it means that they went online or they saw a letter or a sign or something where they called the number or responded in some way. That's them raising their hand saying, please give me a call. So I want to just pull, this was just, it's amazing that you asked what you did. So this is a lead I've been working on. Look at, this is my chicken scratch all over this lead.
Right.
Okay. And it's dated everywhere. Now, I do use a CRM. A CRM is just a mechanism you can use. It's software. So you can keep track of everything, right? I like it. But when I'm talking to people live, I like to write copious notes while we're talking. I don't want to be typing. First of all, they're going to hear me typing. It's just really awkward. So this is just the way I've been doing it for years. So I just keep my notes and I date every little statement that I make. So if I call someone today, I'm going to date it and make the comments that I need to make while I'm talking to them. And then, you know, maybe in two more days, I'm calling back again. I can tell you what my habit is. And this is the way I've been teaching my students for years. If you don't have a little voice inside of you that's saying, boy, if I call them again, they're going to think I'm bugging them. I promise you, you're not calling enough. I want you to feel that voice. I know that you and I are on the same page on this, that you got to, it's follow-up. I'm telling you, 80% of the deals that I get, it has to be follow-up. You rarely ever get a deal on the front end. It's just yes, and it happens tomorrow. There's always more calls to make. You got to go visit the house. You got to do these kinds of things. And so what I'll do is my routine, I'll just tell your people. This is exactly how I do it. I try to flush them out as fast as I can. So I'll give them a call. Let's say it's the first time it is today. I get a lead that comes in. They've raised their hand. That means it's a quality, potentially a quality lead. I call them today. Let's say it goes to voicemail. This is the message I'm going to leave on voicemail. Are your people going to be able to go back? They can like rewind this and they don't have to like watch the whole thing. So they may want to rewind this so they can write this down. Okay. So it goes to voicemail and I'm telling you, it's verbatim. This is exactly what I'll say. I say, hey, Joe, Scott giving you a call here. I see that you just reached out to us about wanting to sell your house. Now, if they saw one of my signs or a letter, I'm going to reference that. I see that you saw one of my signs and you've reached out to us about selling your house. I want you to know I'm definitely interested in buying your house. I say that every single time. Now, I know that maybe one of your folks right now is thinking, what if I don't want to buy it? Well, if you change your mind, then you can say after, yeah, Joe, I don't want to buy your house. Don't worry about that. I'm assuming if you're on the phone, it's all about you want to buy that house. If you can work things out the way that it needs to be worked out. So that's what I'll say. Hey, Joe, just following up here. I see that you saw one of our signs about selling your house. And hey, I was just reaching out to you about, you know, my interest in buying your house. I was hoping to catch you in just now. But hey, you know what? And I almost cut myself off. You know what, Joe? I'm going to go ahead and text you as well and see if we can find a time for us to get on a call here real soon. Okay. Look forward to talking to you soon. That's a very vague statement. That's telling him this is not the last that you've heard from me. It's very subtle, but I'm setting that up to get my foot in the door. Right. I look forward to talking to you real soon. Thanks, Joe. Click. Immediately. I'm going to text. I don't even text anymore. I just talk into this thing. And so I'll just go ahead and open up that number. And then I'll go into the text mode and I'll just talk into it. And I'll say something like this. Hi, Joe, comma. I mean, literally, I'm saying that so it does what I want it to do. Hi, Joe, comma. I was just calling about my interest in buying your house at 123 Main Street in Philadelphia. Are you available now for a call? Question mark. I look forward to chatting with you soon, period. Thanks, exclamation point. And then I put Scott. I don't put hearts and roses and things like that, but I do show a little bit of emotion, right? That I'm excited. Look forward to chatting with you soon, period. Thanks, exclamation point, Scott. That's day one. Tomorrow, I'm calling Joe again. Now, I'm going to, and my message will be a little bit different, not that different, though. So let's say it's the next day. I say, hey, Joe, Scott reaching back out to you. There it is, Scott reaching back out to you. Hey, I was just hoping we could get on a quick call here. You know what, Joe? I'm going to text you again to see if we can find a good time for you to get on a call, okay? Hey, really interested in the house. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks. Click. Text. Hi, Joe. I was just reaching back out to you about my interest in your house. Are you available for a call? That's what I'm pressing them. Now, if I do that like four times, and I, especially if I do it 4 days in a row, but let's say it takes you, even if you go 6 days and you do it four times, that's not bad. That's good follow-up. What I would do is on the sixth day, when you're doing that fourth call, if it goes to voicemail, do not leave a message. Hang up. First of all, everyone's got a cell phone. I know every number that's coming into this phone. He already knows, oh, it's that guy calling me again. You know it is, right? And so you just hang up, and now you're going to text these words. Have you changed your mind about selling your house? ? Don't say, hi, Joe. Don't say, thank you. Don't do anything else. Simply say, have you changed your mind about selling your house? And I'm telling you, about 60% of people will respond to that text. Some will tell you to buzz off. And by the way, most people are not rude. And I don't know what your experience is, Jerome, but most people are pretty cool. But every now and then you might get somebody that's a little rude. But most people are pretty good. But if they've been reaching out to me, they call based on something I had out there for marketing. A lot of times I have those people apologizing, like, oh, man, I've been busy. I've been working overtime. I was in the hospital. I've gotten all kinds of answers. So that's how you flesh them out to see if they're really interested.
Thank you.
Then the last piece that I would throw out there, Jerome, is, and then give it like another 7 to 10 days and then start over again and call them again.
Okay. Helpful. That's helpful. One of the things that you mentioned earlier, you were talking about mindset, and like, you're right. Like, you can Google, I created financing because it ranges so much. Different people have different terms and different strategies for creative finance. So it's like super broad, or it can be very niche specific. But you talked about mindset, and I have a particular person in mind when I'm going to ask you these questions on mindset. So the first thing I want to ask you is, I want you to tell me the most important thing you've learned about mindset. And after you answer that, I have some follow-up questions. And I'm thinking about this one particular person, because I think about this person, I think he represents many other people that don't have the proper mindset. Is that making sense?
Yep. Yeah, it's a great question. Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, tell us like your most important idea, your most important lesson around mindset.
I am my number one asset for my success. I say that again and again. I am my number one asset for my success. If I can believe that, it'll break through a lot of the crap that's going on with that 6 inches between our ears. Because we tend to second guess ourselves. We're not confident. But if you can really say, wait a minute, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, you know, I can learn how to do, I think, most things that I would want. Maybe there are some things that are going to be beyond my intellect that I could ever be able to do. Or maybe it's biological. I can never be a horse racer. I'm too tall. I'm 5'8", which is not tall. But you can't be a jockey and be 5'8". There's no way. And you got to weigh like 112 pounds. Well, biologically, I can't do that. But most other things we can accomplish if we have the right confidence. And mindset has a lot to do with the story that we tell ourselves. I promise you, Jerome, you know what we're doing here. We're making most of this stuff up. I mean, 98% of this stuff that's going on in our head never happens. I like to ask people this question. Have you ever had an argument with someone that you never actually got into an argument with? It's all up here. Oh, I'd be telling him, rah, 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 because you're thinking, I know how that person's going to react. And it never happened because we make up all this crap. All right. So if we're coming to business and something that we're trying to do to improve our life standing, we're trying to provide for our family, which, by the way, here's another mindset piece. There are people depending on me. That's important for me to remind myself of, so that I stay disciplined, I stay focused, I stay intentional. And when you're that way, mindset stuff tends to dissipate a little bit, the negative parts of it. Number one. Number two, don't think that the people who appear that they've overcome the mindset negativity, that voice never goes away. It's just that we have learned to not trust that voice. So if this could be your mantra, right? I am my number one asset for my success. That's going to build up an awful lot of confidence, and confidence will break through a lot of that.
Thank you for sharing that. So we're going to give a name to this person that I'm thinking about, and we're going to call him or her Michael or Michaela, right? I'm going to call that person. And I have just a particular person in mind because we're doing these calls. And this person, everybody's around moving and shaking and doing what they can. I made my call. I did this role play. I got this deal under contract. And there's one person, it's called Michael. Michael's not moving. What advice would you give to Michael to get moving, right? And I want you to think about this too, Scott, because I think I'm going to put you in touch with this particular person. So let's just say you haven't met this person yet. And I told you, I gave you input. And this person, like, they could probably do the stuff, but it's their mindset holding them back. Like, what kind of advice or input would you give that person?
First, I'd say, well, move anyway. Okay. If to use your metaphor here, that everyone's moving and people are doing deals and there's movement, right? I like that about it. Yeah, there's movement. Things are not going to happen if we don't move. So the first advice is you got to move, which means you. And this is true for anyone that has succeeded in anything, whether they admit it to you or not. There has to be the willingness to do imperfect action. And action is a movement word, right? Imperfect action. Maybe this is where our education system, our social system around us that says, this is how you get things done. You got to learn everything about it first, and then you go ahead and do it. That's a problem. Unless, of course, you're a surgeon. I mean, I think I want you to I don't want you to practice on me. Right. But the surgeon still does practice. They practice on other things before they actually do it for real. Right. So there still has to be that stepping into a situation where you're going to do it imperfectly. There's nothing wrong with doing it imperfectly. I would still suggest I still do some things imperfectly, even within my business, because every deal, and Jerome, I bet you've done enough deals that you know there's not one single deal that's ever been the same for me. Not one.
None.
It's amazing. They're snowflakes. They're fingerprints. They're all different. Now, some of them have some similarity. So it's not like I have to rethink every one. But boy, sometimes you bump into something, you go, man, I got to get my head around that one, right? And if you get scared, you back off. I want to give, let me see if I can say this in 30 seconds. So I've got a contractor that's working in a house right now that I got the original contract last March. We are in, I don't know if you want to talk dates here, but we're in February right now. So this was almost a year ago. Now I closed on the house about 5 weeks ago. So it took like 10 months to get through this entire deal. But I promise you, there's probably potentially between $85,000 and $105,000 deal here. This is a creative finance deal. What was complex was we couldn't find the lien holders because they were private people. There was a divorce. They didn't have any of their paperwork. We had to get an attorney involved, title search. It was a mess. But boy, did I learn a lot through that process. I imperfectly went through the process, and we got this great deal that we're working on right now.
Thank you. So I'm thinking about Michael again, and Michael represents certain person, right? They have like the mindset. I've been involved in real estate for like 7 years, and I've been to like a bunch of RIAs, and I'm thinking about kind of that avatar, right? I meet this avatar at the RIA and they know everything. I'm like, man, you know more than me, but they don't move. Again, it's like the same process. So what kind of advice would you have for somebody that knows it all, right? Like they got all the education, but I'm finding that people aren't taking like the next step. So
yeah,
it might be the same advice you gave the last person, but I want to hear your perspective on like, how can we get a person to move? And I guess I'm being self-serving when I'm asking this because I'm thinking about coaching. I think coaching really helps. So I'd like to hear your perspective on that because we go learn, like you can learn everything on YouTube, but if it was that easy, everybody would be out here doing it and moving and shaking. So let's hear your perspective on that.
So that's a very, very fair question. So it'd be like step number two. So step number one is move anyway. Mm-hmm. But step number two might really be number one. Maybe we'd have to reverse it. That the issue, and I just would suspect, because I've run into the same kind of people, and many people are in this category, where they've gotten a lot of knowledge, but they don't know how to do it. If I gave you a book right now and said, here's a book. Let's just say you've never ridden a bike before. And I said, I wrote this book on how to ride a bike. You just read this and you'll be able to ride a bike. What do you know? Do you think you'd be able to learn how to ride a bike because I wrote a book on telling you how to ride a bike?
No.
There's only one way to learn how to ride a bike.
Yeah.
Get on the bike. Jerome, when you learn how to ride a bike, do you have a story to tell me about that?
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah. I remember I was like, so I grew up in the projects in South Philadelphia. I was really young, and it was my stepfather, from what I remember, and he helped me like ride the bike. I took off the training wheels, and I remember I kept falling and falling and falling and falling. And but I never gave up. I was like, I want to do this. It's going to be fun. But I kept falling. And one day I got it. And since you brought it up, I don't mean to make this about me, but I remember now I had my father there, my stepfather, and he was like coaching me. Right. And I learned some things. His process wasn't perfect. Like he was a little rough, but I taught my children how to ride their bikes too. And I think it took me over a course of maybe a week for me to learn how to ride my bike. But when I took that knowledge and I took what I learned and I implemented it with my kids, each of them learned in like less than 4 hours. And I think it was only 1 hour. I took the training wheels off, right? Yeah. I remember my daughter particularly, because my son, he was riding and she was like a little jealous. Like, and I appreciate competition. Like, yeah, be jealous in a healthy way. She was a little jealous. Yeah. And I said, come on, baby, I'm going to teach you how to ride this bike. She got it in 1 hour and I was blown away. So those are all my stories of riding a bike.
I want to connect this. That's beautiful that you shared this, by the way. So I'm going to connect it. And you did say something about coaching, right? So your stepfather sort of coached you. But the other value of coaching is creating community around you with people that you're really trying to help, right? So as people get to know you and you make those connections and they trust you, they feel like they know you, they trust you. Well, they know you, they like you, and they trust you. Then people are willing to say, you know what, maybe I'll follow this guy's lead. But the hope is you always expose them to other people that are in the same arena that we're in. Because when they see other people doing it, so let me tell you the story about my daughter real quick. So here I am teaching her how to ride her bike. So we get the, you know, we buy her a nice little cute little pink bike, and she's got these blonde, you know, ponytails or pigtails hanging out, cute as a button, 5 years old, 6 years old, whatever it was. And she's got the training wheels, and she's like, oh, she's showing off. Oh, yeah, this is great. And I say, hey, we got to take those training wheels off. You know, she got a little nervous. She said, well, Daddy, don't let go of the bike. I said, I won't let go of the bike. So we're running around. I'm in this parking lot. We would go there, you know, a couple times a week. I did this for like, it took like 3 weeks. My kid was a little slow, okay, Jerome? Or maybe I was a horrible teacher. But anyway, but the thing is, it was great exercise. Here I am holding the back of this bike. She didn't know it. There were times I would let go of the bike and she was doing it.
Wow.
And as soon as I told her, Jessica, you're actually doing this, she'd freak out and almost fall over and I had to grab the bike. So I kept doing this. And this one day, it's a similar story to yours, the competition aspect. And it doesn't have to be competition. Sometimes it's just seeing someone else.
Mm-hmm.
This kid pulls up with his parent, takes out his bike, but the parent's not doing anything. He just gets on his bike. They're about the same age. And he's riding around the parking lot like, la, la, la. And my daughter looks at this kid and she turns over the shoulder. She goes, Dad, let go of the bike. And I let go of the bike. And that's how she learned how to ride her bike.
Nice.
Because there was someone else. And I would say that as we build our community, as we're trusted people, and they see other people are doing it with us, the sky's the limit, man.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention that about my story, too. There was other children, including my siblings, riding their bikes, too. And that very inspired helpful. Me. I was like, I want to make that same progress. I want to do the same thing. Yeah. So that's part of my story as well. I appreciate
can I come back to Michael and Micah? Or,
yes. Micaiah, yeah. Let's talk to Michael and Michaela. Yeah.
And to say, and always find someone then. The thing that can scare us is doing it alone, right? Mm-hmm. So now I've been doing this for a long time, and I've mentored, coached hundreds of students around the country. Mm-hmm. And I have a coach in my life. I have always had a coach. I'm paying some good money for my coach because I'm doing some much higher level stuff because I'm building my own coaching business in this process. That's an ongoing process, right? There's always someone that's a little further down the road. And I suppose I could convince myself, well, I can figure it out. I don't want to figure it out over the next 4 years. I want to trust the people that I really feel like, no, this guy's got it or this lady's got it. And I think they can help me get to where I'm trying to get. And so when we put our trust in those people that we feel confident with, a lot of stuff can happen.
Scott, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I would love to have you back sometime in the future. But I want to get us wrapped up. I want to be respectful of your time. You said we got about 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you the reason why I bring people on is to provide value to the audience, but also provide value to my guests. And I like people. I don't like people to say, hey, can I take you out for lunch and pick your brain? Like, no, you can't do that. I like paid thousands and thousands of dollars for my knowledge. So you got to figure out a different way to bring value to me. So
yeah,
one of the ways I like to do that to my guests is I like to ask them straight up, like on the podcast, like, how can someone add immediate value to you or your business? So Scott, if somebody wants to like get with you or learn, it could be, hey, follow me on YouTube, buy my book, subscribe to my podcast, sign up for my coaching program, whatever it is you say. Mm-hmm. So how can someone add immediate value to you personally or your business profession?
And again, and I want to be able to reciprocate on that too, and also offer value. And hopefully there's been value in this. I really have enjoyed our conversation.
For sure. Anyway. For sure.
I think it's really good. So, so by connecting with me, I would hope that the value would go both ways, right? That I can still have an opportunity. I'm a teacher at heart, man. I really do want to share the stuff that I know, and I want to be helpful. So people can find me on Facebook. It's probably the best place to go, probably for most people anyway. That's where most of us hang out. A lot of communication there. So you can look me up on Facebook. It's Scott with one T. I suppose if you put in two, it might still come up, but it's Scott, one T, and my last name is Poirier, P-O-I-R-I-E-R. Facebook, you can find me there. You can always email me. You can email me at Scott, that's one T on Scott, at Scott with one T. My parents cursed me with this when they spelt my name with one T, and now I can't break away from it. Life would be easier if I just left it the normal way. But anyway, so it's Scott at Scott, R-E as in real estate, reblueprint.com. So someone can email me there as well. And if we needed to connect, we could do that. If I can help you, your value that you would bring to me would be, I mean, with you and or your people. I mean, I'm a coach. It's what I do. This is what I smoke day in and day out. Okay. So I want to be helpful. So we can connect. And Jerome, you know, I offer like on Facebook, I do routine invitations for people to come in and hear me live doing live seller calls. In fact, if any of your people wanted to get hold of me, I think I would give them, in fact, I will, I'll give them a link with one of the calls that I've done to a seller. And I'll share also a link for a buyer where we get a non-refundable option deposit on a lease option deal. And I've got one of those conversations in mind that I think you'd be like, whoa, that was a pretty good conversation. Just to hear, you'll hear the confidence, you'll hear the engagement and sort of how that goes. And I would love to offer that as a value piece as well.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure the audience will appreciate it. And I'm thinking about some of the people in one of my groups that might value that as well.
Sure.
We'll talk about in the future.
Yeah.
The next question, very similar. It's the same question, but this time it's long-term. How can someone bring long-term value to you personally or professionally?
Really would be to, I mean, if you did connect with me on Facebook and became a part of that regular community that's there, I would want you to be helpful. I'd want you to be a sort of a go-giver. I think that's kind of a term being used a lot these days, right? Be a go-giver within the community that I have around me. That anything you can do to be helpful to other people, keep them encouraged, keep them motivated, and be a part of the community that I have. That would bring great long-term value to me. My approach and what I'm doing with my coaching is, and Jerome, you know this, a lot of times you get a lot of good people out there. A lot of people have good knowledge and they're selling programs and things like that, and they're valuable, but they're kind of pay to play, right? You come in, you buy it, maybe it's a 3-month program or a 6-month program, or you're just buying a course or something like that. And then that's it. If you want more contact, you got to pay again, right? What I'm doing is building community. I want you in my community, and I want you to stay in that community. And we help each other and we encourage each other. And as we cross-pollinate with each other, now we have people in my community that maybe they're private lenders. Or maybe they know the creative financing, or maybe they do fix and flips, or maybe they're wholesalers, or whatever it is. And now it's symbiotic. We're all working together. And that's what I want more than anything else.
Thank you for sharing that. And just so my audience knows, that's one of the reasons why we connected. You know, we're connected in community. We're connected on Facebook. Provide value in your posts and doing those calls. And I really appreciate it. So thank you.
It's really an honor to do it.
Thank you publicly.
Yeah.
The next question, these are like a little bit selfish, but they provide value too. You can see back there, I'm like an avid, I love books. I keep them in my bag. And that's one of the things I absolutely love. So I call this around a closing table. It means we're closing things out. You know, real estate, yay, closing table. So what are three books that you would recommend to the audience and why?
Only three, huh?
Let's start with three, and if you got a couple I'll more you want to throw in there.
I actually did pull some aside here that I wanted to show you. First thing I do, first of all, is I this is just called a bullet journal. It's just a good way to sort of keep notes of things and all that. And although if you look through here, it looks like I might be really organized, but it's really kind of a lot of the stuff that's in here is random. But I am a collector of quotes and things like that, things that really kind of help with mindset and all that. Like I just happened to turn here just accidentally to this page. I picked up this quote. I don't know if you know the name Jim Rohn. He's no longer with us.
Yeah, but, it's my favorite.
Inspirational.
My favorite personal development person.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. So it's interesting. The very first one that I wrote this thing down, I don't know how long ago, but he said, if you're looking for things to change, then maybe you need to change. You want to help your mindset? Swallow that and chew on that for a bit and swallow it and go, maybe the change that needs to happen is you. The more that I've embraced that, the more that positive things have happened to me. Because there's always room for change. Okay, so coming to books. This is an easy read. You could read this one. I mean, you could read this in probably 20 minutes, okay? And it might even feel a little basic when you first start reading it. I would encourage you, read it anyway. It is an easy read, but the concept is really, really good, okay? So it's called Rhinoceros Success. You know what rhinos do? They put their head down. They put their head down and nothing's going to stop them, man. They put their head down and go. I have found that more people just give up so quickly. They don't have, there's no rhino in them. So even though this may feel like a real basic read, read it cover to cover. Make this a staple. You should come back to it again and again to remind yourself about the value of just put your head down and just keep plowing through. Imperfect action. It's what we've all done. Anyone that's learned how to do anything, imperfect action is the only way that you get better at what you're trying to do. Okay? That's how I learned how to play racquetball. I mentioned that in my bio, right?
Yes.
I love me some racquetball. Okay, I know probably a lot of people know the name Robert Kiyosaki.
Yes.
And, of course, I've got his other book here, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That's a must read for sure. It's just a foundational book. But you want to think about how to view money. This is a great book right here, The Cash Flow Quadrant. And he's going to talk about going from owning a job to owning a business to being an entrepreneur kind of a thing, then to owning a business and then to being a passive investor. He's going to give you some great lessons on how to even see money. You got to know how money works. So that's a great book. That's a great read. And this one's more, and I really thought about this, I mean, because there are a lot of books I read. I'm definitely a reader kind of a guy. This one's more for discipline. This will help mindset as well. So I don't know if you know the name Ryan Holiday, but anything I've ever picked up from Ryan.
Ew, very, I just mentioned him. He's, sorry to interrupt you. I said I just mentioned him the other day, but my favorite author, modern day author, is Robert Greene. Robert Greene is Ryan Holiday's mentor. So look at that coincidence.
So now you see it. So this is called Discipline is Destiny, The Power of Self-Control. We just give in way too easy on stuff, right? And the sort of the top part of the title is the Stoic Virtues series. Don't let the word stoic scare you. In our culture, we hear the word stoic and we think stiff and stick in the mud kind of a thing. But the Stoics really did try to, at least many of them, it was about discipline to say, I'm trying to accomplish something. And we don't do that just because we want to. We do it because we actually, we set certain habits and play certain rhythms. And I like rhythms. I'm a gardener, big time gardener, organic gardener, 1,800 square foot garden. I'm a busy guy. I haven't missed my 1,800 square foot garden in over 35 years because it's a passion that I have. And I've learned how to do it really well. I didn't start that way, but I learned how to do it really well. So these disciplines will help you. But I think a driving force has to be something like, if you agree with me, there are people that are depending on me to succeed.
I 100% agree.
Yeah. I'm planning on being here tomorrow, but I mean, I could get hit by a bus. I mean, anything could happen. I want to be as prepared as I can to take care of the people around me as well.
Yeah, I always try to make sure I drive that to anybody I'm dealing with. Like, it's not about you. Yeah. It's about the people around you. They need you. So go be the best version of you.
Yeah.
If you can't put yourself aside, think about, you know, your why, like your family. Who do you have that you can help? So, Scott, that was helpful. I appreciate
one other books. I'll throw in one other book. And it's
give it to us.
Book for negotiating, if you're ready to get to that, called Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss.
Okay.
That's a great book. Great read.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
All right, man.
I got two more questions. I would like to know, I want to hear about your coaching program. Tell us about your coaching program and tell people how they can reach you and find out more about your coaching program and the community you're building. We hinted on it. We hinted at it. We talked a little bit about it. Yep. Let's be a little more direct. And you tell us the coaching program and what you have going on.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all wrapped up about, it is all about creative financing, but I can tell you that the majority of it is to help people break through a lot of the stuff that's going on in here. So I can show you how easy it is to learn how to do the creative end. What I'm doing is, and I've built these modules sort of along the way with my students, by the way. I didn't build it first and then ramming it down students' throats. What I did is I brought in my one-on-one students. And I can promise you, to be a one-on-one student with me is a high ticket price, because you're getting, it's just you and me, okay? So that's a pretty, to get that kind of attention from me, there's a lot of value there. And the people that I'm working with are high level, meaning that they're serious about it. I'm not saying high level in that they know all this stuff, because they don't, but they're serious in saying, I'm gonna put my money where my mouth is and I want this access. So what I've done is, with those one-on-one students, is I've built my coaching program around them because of the natural questions, the hangups that they have, the places they get stuck. And so I'm responding to them. They go, oh, that's what your problem is? Jeez, I thought it was this. And now I'm realizing, oh, that's the problem? Well, not only am I helping them with that problem, now I'm building my education around it so that now I'm bringing in a different group of people where it's a small group. It's about 15 to 20 people. That's the group that I'm working on right now. And I'm at the very front end of this. I just have opened the door for this, Jerome. So I don't know when all this is going to be aired. But for those few people that came in on the front end on this, it's going to feel like you've got me one-on-one, because I'm not going to start with working with 15 or 20 people. But that's about as big as I'm going to make that group, 15 or 20. And then continue to build more education around them and what they need. But it'll be done within a group, which is valuable to everyone that's in that group, because now there's that cross-pollination stuff that's happening. And then very, very soon, probably within the next month or so, I'll then go more national with the whole program, where I can invite people in to be a part of this community. That's the 10,000 foot view.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And in the future, I'd love to have you come back and talk about it. You know, once you got some details, maybe some case studies, some stories, love to have you talk about it again.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. I got to tell you, in the times that we've talked and we've had this interaction, I think the world of you. You're a smart guy. Your community is lucky to have you. I mean, they really are, because you're engaged. I see all your podcasts. You're bringing people. You're bringing people to them to try to inspire them. They're lucky to have you. That's all.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Scott. You got it, man. Let's get us wrapped up. You talked about it before, but tell us where we can learn about you online. Do we go to a website, YouTube, Facebook? Tell us how we can find out.
The easiest thing is just go to Facebook. That's where I'm active the most. I post things. I do live videos. I invite you to come in on some live content that I can do, like calling sellers, maybe even some buyers at some point. That would be kind of fun to do as well. Facebook, Scott. One T on Scott. You got to remember that. I'm the one T Scott. Scott Poirier. Just type that in at Facebook and you'll find me there. And then you can email me, scott@scottreblueprint.com.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott. If you could close us out with one word, no explanation, what word would that be?
Ooh, trust. I got to do it in two. Trust yourself. That's two words. You got to trust yourself, baby.
All right.
You really want me to do one, right?
Okay. Yeah, one.
Okay. I'm going to come back to what we talked about. Move.
Move. I like it. I like that even better. Thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate your time today. I'm going to get us wrapped up. I want you to sit here for like one more minute so we can, so I can play the outro.
Peace.
All right.